Little taparoo. Tap it in. Tappity tap tap.
Get in the hole, ball. Why won't you go home?
It's up for grabs now! Thomas! Right at the end!
Aguero! I swear you'll never see anything like this ever again! So watch it! Drink it in!
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Final Countdown, a podcast looking back at great finals within the game of football. I'm Lewis, here with my co-host Adam.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. This will probably be a couple of weeks delayed from when you hear it, but that is when we've just recorded it.
I still wish you a Happy New Year.
Oh, that's very good, yeah. So, Adam, it's your report. We'll get straight into it. New year, new start, new vigour.
Look at you.
So, yeah, take it away.
Well, we actually come in at quite a dark moment in English football, and how the 85-86 season didn't necessarily make it right, because obviously a lot of things were still wrong with English football, but it needed a shot in the arm.
Yeah.
English football was an all-time low. Just to kind of highlights from the previous season, a young lad had been killed in fights between Birmingham and Leeds fans. Millwall fans had rioted with police. I think that's every season, to be honest, but yeah, it happened as well. 56 people died at the Bradford fire. 39 people died at the Heysel riots, which led to English teams being banned from European competitions. That was all in the previous season.
Mm-hmm.
It was a dark time.
A dark
time.
Day.
Yeah, so as...
Sorry to interrupt you, but just to make it slightly more personal, is this kind of the football atmosphere that you grew up in? I'm trying to think, you would have been, what, six, seven at this point? So it's probably a little bit early. But
I don't think I was aware of the darkness of it. For, this is the season I first remember.
Right,
for reasons that we'll get to, I was an Everton fan, my brother was a Liverpool fan, so this season in some ways kind of lit us up and our brother rivalry, but I don't remember being aware of the kind of hooliganism and all that kind of stuff going on. I saw, obviously learnt about it, but I don't remember feeling it was a dark time.
I guess in a way you probably crested at the best time, which would have been just before 1990, right? Like when you properly could take an interest in it yourself and follow football.
Yeah, I mean, this was the, you know, if you look back in your life, anyone listening's life, there's a period of time where football grabbed them.
Yeah.
And this kind of 5-year period really was that for me.
Excellent.
So yeah, absolutely. So there's a lot of personal memory with this, but anybody that lived through this will remember that it was going to take something special to rescue football from the doldrums of 1985. And something special is actually what we got. We got a genuine title race between a few teams. We got a relegation special, if you like, not for the teams that went down, but there was a lot going on. We got an underdog story. And we got kind of all kinds of narrative going on, teams kind of appearing from nowhere, some recognised names that went on to become big names in football.
It's got a bit of everything.
Yeah, it all seemed to happen in this season. It was kind of crazy. And to kind of top it off, which is where we'll end, it was a World Cup year. We'll center on that a little bit as we come to a close, but just to kind of set the scene of the 1985-86 season, obviously Man United had won the FA Cup in deep in extra time in May. They went off to a flyer under Big Ron Atkinson,
the Big Mo. They carried on from season to season.
Well, the Big Ron.
The big, the very Big Ron.
I don't know who Big Mo is.
That's his wife. Big Ron and Big Mo, you know.
Mo Atkinson. Lovely girl.
And I'm also now picturing Mo Molum. Too many Mo's, too many Mo's.
Sure, Big Ron would appreciate Mo Molum. So anyway, Man United, I don't know how we got there. Man United, they went 10 points clear. They won 10 games in a row.
Wow.
And 13 of their first 15 under Big Ron Atkinson. I don't know why I'm calling Big Ron Atkinson. I can't call him Ron Atkinson.
No, no.
So they went 10 points clear in November.
You would say that should be unassailable.
Yeah.
It's funny, really, because obviously is pushing it back, and it isn't Premier League, which I know is basically football starting in 92 for a lot of people.
Yeah.
But obviously Newcastle choking at Christmas and like throwing away
13 were clear,
points.
Yeah.
But you don't hear about Man United choking and throwing away a 10-point lead.
Well, I mean, it's quite unusual to be 10 points clear in November.
Yeah, massively
Which, you know, obviously if you win 13 of the first 15 games, you're going to be relatively clear. But I think there was an element where FA Cup holders, they come in, a strong side, Brian Robson, you know, England captain.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a lot to think that Atkinson had cracked it. And then it was absolutely surreal what happened to them. So Brian Robson, the first thing, was a major factor. He only played half of the games in the season.
Interesting.
Basically up until November, pulled his hamstring, and then came back when it was dead and buried in kind of March, April.
Pretty much tied to his...
Almost exactly, yeah. So their form just came apart completely. It was amazing to see, and a lot of people, well, you know, two or three people that I read, you know, reports on said that Man United was such a one-man team at that point. Robson was that good.
See, that's interesting, because I know Robson's reputation mainly through England. Obviously, I know he's a Man United legend, but my personal relationship to him was growing up, obviously post his time, really, but knowing he loomed large. I didn't realise he was that good. He was the Roy Keane before Roy Keane.
Yeah, I mean, I think this was his period of time, really. Yeah. So this was when he was England captain. I think really what happened, from my experience, was that he was just always injured.
Right.
He was a real kind of like fly-in, like nothing. He was fearless.
Yeah, yeah.
But almost reckless in that way. And he got injured a lot. Mm. And, you know, both England campaigns, 1986 and 1990, he played in 82 as well. But those two World Cups, really, when he was in his prime, he got injured in both.
Did he really?
Yeah.
I don't remember him getting injured in 86. Yeah. He's on the pitch against Maradona, isn't he? Or clearly not. He must have been injured.
No, he wasn't, no. Wow. He got injured. That's why Hoddle played.
Ah, okay, interesting.
So yeah, he got injured in that one. He got injured in 1990, went home. So he was pretty unlucky, really, that sense. I mean, you could say he, flew into tackles and all the rest of it, but other players did that and didn't necessarily get injured. So
here's the what if. 1986, Diego Armando Maradona.
Yeah.
He's jinking around
Robson
everybody.
Chops him down.
Exactly. If Robson, even if he gets a red, but he stops that goal, do England find enough to come back and just let that hang in the air?
Robson stopped Maradona. That's the headline. His hamstring was a major factor. But also, interestingly, reading back, so they obviously won their first 10 matches. They won 13 of their first 15. But when you start to look at it, and people have, it became clear that the teams they were beating were not the teams that were a force.
Ah, interesting. So the fixture list.
Yeah, really interesting. The fixture list played a role in a misleading league table.
Yeah, very interesting.
So of the 10 sides that they beat before November, which caused them to go 10 points clear, three of them would be relegated and four others would fight the drop.
Ah, wow.
Isn't that nuts?
Yeah,
so
funny.
Just by chance, they happen to play all the weak teams first.
And they say the league table doesn't lie, but in a way, it'll tell a half-truth. Yeah, it'll have a little white lie now and again, just to say...
I reckon the league table came up with that saying.
I would never lie, I'm the league table. Nah, not me, mate. Nah, wrong guy, governor.
Well, the league table said it.
He can't lie. It's like one of those riddles, like one of them can only lie and one can only tell the truth. It's like FIFA and the English First Division, which one is which?
Exactly, the same thing. Ultimately, United came apart, but you could argue that they didn't actually face anybody until November.
Yeah, sure.
Which is interesting, but then you also have the Brian Robson factor as well. It's probably a combination of the two.
Yeah.
But it absolutely came apart. We'll come back to United later in the podcast, but yeah, they 10 points cleared, throw it away, and they weren't even in the title race.
Oh, really? They're not one of the ones?
At all. So, we'll come back to that. West Ham were another team to step up into the title race with the duo of Frank McAvenny and Tony Cotty.
Oh, yes.
Do you remember them?
Yeah, I do remember them, yeah.
Frank McAvenny coming from Celtic and Tony Cotty, West Ham legend.
Cotty, to me, you don't hear people talk about him, but he was quite an underrated striker, wasn't he? Like he was quite good.
He was great for West Ham and he was great for Everton in quite a bad time for Everton.
Right, okay.
These two together, they were superb. They scored 46 goals between themselves.
Yeah, yeah. That's impressive.
Yeah, it was pretty impressive. Firing West Ham, who were nothing of a team really in this era until McAvenny came along, firing them to the top three by Christmas, where they would still be as the season closed.
Wow, amazing.
So they finished third.
Yeah, incredible stuff.
Which is a great finish for West Ham in that era, but largely down to just goals non-stop from that front too.
I do feel like nowadays, because of the way tactics have moved on, formations that teams play, et cetera, you just don't get a good strike partnership anymore.
You don't, do you?
But that's through really the 90s weird, yeah. and the late 80s, it was incredible. You'd have like Quinn and Phillips, SAS. You'd have York
Quinn
and Cole.
Quinn and Phillips, that's a...
hey, that was a great partnership.
That is a grab,
You'd have we said Sheeran, Sheringham.
Sheringham and Klinsmann at Tottenham.
Yeah. Like nowadays, I genuinely am
Cole and York.
Yeah, I already said them.
Sorry,
yeah, that's
I'm
all
just,
right, mate.
I'm just naming ones now.
But I do feel like nowadays, I think, and this is a stretch. Last season, you had like Lautaro Martinez and Lukaku in Italy. Like, but that
you I don't have it, do you?
No, I literally can't think of
like 40 goal a season partnership. Yeah. That's what I want.
Yeah, just two
don't
strikers.
Come, don't
at the top
come
of
at
game.
Me with a partnership if you haven't got 40 goals.
Yeah, exactly. And it doesn't count when you're spreading it across like a front three because really it's two inverted wingers. You're not yeah. and one guy on his own who's just holding up the ball. That's really what the front three is nowadays. The guy in the middle yeah. isn't a goal scorer. He's generally the playmaker that links the two overlapping yeah. wingers. But I literally can't think of any.
No, I was literally trying to go back through and I can't. Is York and Cole, is that really the last partnership? Strike partnership?
I'm trying to think. Yeah, because like, I was trying to think, oh, did Van Nistelrooy partner anyone? But not really.
Vardy was on his own, wasn't he?
Vardy was on his own. Goals. Yeah. Yeah, crazy.
That is weird. And football changed.
Wow. The death of the strike partnership.
Death of the strike partnership.
Raise well, glass.
From one strike partnership to another then. To, go on. That's the way it was in the 80s. Chelsea, they sat second at Christmas.
Wow.
With, you remember these names? Kerry Dixon
yes.
and David Speedy.
I don't remember David Speedy. David Kerry Speedy. Dixon, I know.
Speedy went on to play for Liverpool.
Did he really?
Yeah, yeah. So they were quite, you know, firing all cylinders yeah. for Chelsea, rivaling the Hammers front two up until Christmas. They would still be, this is interesting because this is where the European thing comes into it.
Right.
They would still be in the title race in mid-March, which is pretty...
Yeah, yeah, you know, it's late into...
They are there. Yeah. A 1-0 win at Southampton put them 4 points behind leaders at the time, Everton, with two games in hand.
Mm-hmm.
So they are...
Yeah, right up there.
Top of the league, essentially. Yeah. You know, you'd be thinking, right, we are absolutely in this. However, they had to play the final of the newfangled Full Members Cup.
Ah, we've spoken briefly about the Full Members Cup before, didn't we?
So the Full Members Cup was the FA's we don't care about getting kicked out of yeah, sure. Europe Cup.
Yeah. We never wanted to be in that anyway. No, I never asked her out. I didn't want to be your girlfriend. That's basically what it is. Nah, never, not even interested, mate.
That ever happened to you?
Me? No. I've never been cruelly rejected at a year six school disco.
Yeah. I mean, I can imagine you playing in a full member cup.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. It was named after me. That guy's a massive member. He's an absolute weapon.
So, yeah, the Full Members Cup was... You know, it was pathetic, really, because even the name is kind of almost saying, like, everybody who's meant to be here is here.
Yeah, sure.
And it's just like, just accept the fact that you
did... take a slap on
yeah,
the wrist.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
So anyway, the FA covering themselves in glory. Anyway, so the final of this new competition was played the very next day. So Chelsea beat Southampton 1-0. They then played Man City in the Full Members Cup the very next day. The impact of that, and again, it's a little bit mythical,
yeah.
but the impact of that led to Chelsea losing their next two league games, 4-0 and 6-0.
Bloody hell. Wow.
They then only picked up 9 points from the last 33.
Oh, that is, even for Chelsea, that is like...
Bad, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is really disheartening.
So mid-March, they've got two games in hand and yeah. go top of the league if they win both. They get 9 for the last 33 and they simply aren't in the title race.
Oh my God, that is harsh.
Crazy.
What a choke.
So those were the kind of also-rans, but as ever in the 80s, it was always going to be about Merseyside.
Yes.
And 85-86 really is about the two Merseyside teams, Everton and Liverpool. Liverpool were very much in transition. The team still to properly recover from the loss of Souness in 1984 to Sampdoria, not to mention the aftershock of the Heysel disaster and everything, you know, Liverpool's involvement in that and the subsequent punishment that came to all English teams. Everton, meanwhile, had their best side arguably in their history.
Oh, that's a claim.
Which is quite impressive. The reigning champions, they won the league, narrowly lost the cup. You going to say something?
I was just going to ask, have you got Lineker yet or is that later?
Coming to it.
Oh,
The reigning champions who had added Gary Lineker to the mix to replace Andy Gray.
Oh, you sold Gray. I thought Gray and Lineker, that would have been a good strike.
It would have been.
Gray
yeah, controversial. I couldn't find a lot of reason why Gray went.
Yeah, it surprises me.
The fans kind of implored Harold Kendall not to sell him, but he sold him.
Very strange.
There's not a lot of details to why.
Right.
So I think he got caught saying stupid stuff with Richard Keys on a motorway.
Well, somebody better get down there and explain offside to her.
Yeah, I know. Can you leave that? Give her a license. That's exactly what I said. Women don't know the offside rule.
Of course they don't. The game's gone mad. See the charming Karen Brady this morning complaining about sexism. Yeah, do me a favour, love.
Always worth bringing that up again. Yeah.
It was got just banter.
Oh, my God. ridiculous.
Yeah, so... I was going to make a joke there about Andy Gray shaving Richard Keys' arms.
He needs it, I tell you that. Just waxing Richard Keys.
I couldn't find the link. Anyway, so Gary Lineker, 800,000 from Leicester City over to Everton, and massively strengthened their team. Lineker had an absolutely brilliant season, which we'll come back to in a second. But yeah, he kind of catapulted Everton from already title contenders. You know, they were brilliant in 85, but they started sluggishly, unfortunately. But by February, they had they won the Anfield Merseyside Derby.
Yep. So they got a bit of a record. Like these last couple of seasons, they've really picked up their record at beating. Because I remember a couple of reports ago referencing the fact that Everton beat Liverpool for the first time in like 9 years or something. Yeah. And it seems like they went on a bit of a run of actually getting the better of us in the Merseyside Derby.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, this one's particularly famous. Lineker and Sharp score, and it's at Anfield. Oh, yeah. That didn't happen. Sure. In the 80s, it didn't happen. So that, you know, Anfield was a fortress, a genuine fortress, especially in the Merseyside Derby. So the when they beat them and beat them clearly at Anfield to go 3 points clear with a game in hand.
Oh, wow.
And eight clear of Liverpool.
Yeah, massive.
And that's important because Liverpool come back. The league pretty much looks sewn up. So that's March, three clear of second place, eight clear of Liverpool. You're kind of thinking this is...
pole position.
Yeah, pole position. They're a team in form. They got the top scorer in the league.
Yeah.
But Liverpool's response to that defeat was frankly ludicrous.
This is what I like to hear.
Liverpool would go on a run of winning 10 of their remaining 11 games, drawing the other. Everton, unfortunately, would draw three times and lose twice. The second defeat, a crucial 1-0 loss, to hand the title to Liverpool.
Is that right?
In the last 2 weeks of the season.
Oh, the last 2 weeks as well.
Isn't that crazy?
I tell you what, it must have felt like Jaws, like for Everton, just watching Liverpool just dude.
Just lose a bloody game. Dude.
Yeah, exactly. Just ridiculous. But again, like, I know we've obviously spoken about Liverpool being a bit in transition and everything that had happened over Europe and stuff, but just a juggernaut back then. It's basically what we think about Man City now. Like, as of recording, Liverpool are 5 points clear of Man City.
Yeah.
But that doesn't feel like enough because we're like, well, we're post-Christmas now, so Man City will do what Man City
do.
You're
expecting a juggernaut
to
come.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. It's just like, well, they're probably going to win 10 out of 11 games now.
I mean, it's crazy. It's a crazy amount of form. What's amazing as well, which I didn't realise, which I don't know what you think of this, but two of the articles that I read about this season depicted this Liverpool team as one of the weakest in history.
Yeah, it doesn't...
Which is weird because they won the double.
Yeah, sure. But I think... it's difficult because I don't think they're comparing it to their peers. They're comparing it to past Liverpool teams and, well, not really too much future Liverpool teams, but I think that's the difficulty is like, this is the third iteration of the all-conquering Liverpool team now. Yeah. So you're kind of just looking backwards and going, are they as good as the like 78, 79 team or whatever? So I think it's more about comparing it to past versions of themselves rather than comparing it to the rest of the league.
Yeah. Just really interesting. I mean, this is Dalglish's first season as well as player manager. Mm-hmm. So just, I guess from my point of view, it's just a Liverpool team that I knew. So it never occurred to me they were considered weak.
Yeah, sure.
So I find that interesting that historically this Liverpool team is like, oh, it's one of the weaker teams.
Yeah, yeah.
But they won the double against a really good Everton team.
Yeah, sure.
And against, you know, United, West Ham, Chelsea, you know, a lot of teams in the mix.
Yeah.
And yet Liverpool won 10 of the last 11 and won the league.
Is that the magic of Anfield, though. And I know I'm biased Liverpool fan, but that sense of like muscle memory of winning and experience, I know that this team necessarily weren't exactly the same as the ones previous, but it's just that sense of like Anfield on European nights, Man United in extra time for a long time.
Yeah,
like,
maybe.
These kind of things that just play, the narratives that play in players' heads. And you wonder if when Liverpool won five in a row, they went, hold on, we've got this. We know what this is now.
Yeah.
And other teams, it got in their heads of, oh no, Liverpool have broke that momentum. We know what happens. Even though that might not have been strictly true.
Quite possibly, yeah. I mean, it's got to be something like that. I mean, obviously they won the games they won, but yeah, it's crazy. I remember reading... Lineker scores 40 goals in this tournament.
40?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. 40 goals? Yeah. That is insane.
40 goals for Everton in all competitions, 30 in the league.
Bloody hell.
And he won nothing.
That is so cruel,
like,
isn't it?
It's crazy. And I remember him, you know, being interviewed about this season and saying, like, he almost looks back and can't believe they didn't win anything. Because they were so good.
Yeah, exactly. And the idea that a team would have a striker like that and not win anything. Yeah. Like if at the start of the season you said, look, I'm not going to give it away, wink, wink, but Gary's going to score 40 goals this season. Yeah. Every Everton fan would be like, right, we've got the league then.
So Liverpool got 40, Sharp got 19, and they still didn't win anything. I mean, they got to the final of the FA Cup. Yeah. They got to the last 2 weeks of the the league, but ultimately fell short when it really mattered.
One of the most unlucky teams then, possibly in football history.
Yeah, but then if you draw three times and lose twice in a title run-in, I mean, that's not great.
Yeah.
When the other team isn't doing anything close to that.
Yeah, very true.
But anyway, Liverpool win the league. We'll talk about the cup in a second because we have to cover the significant others.
Is Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant! That is schoolboy's own stuff.
So at the low end of the table, we had relegation drama. Yeah, so a disastrous season saw West Brom relegated in bottom place after just four wins.
Oh my God, that's dire,
isn't it? The entire season.
That is some dross right there.
Yeah, it's not great.
Those poor Baggies fans. You imagine turning up week after week. And you've got more games this season as well.
Exactly. Oh. Yeah, it just goes on and on, doesn't it? Yeah, and then they must have been relegated pretty early if they'd only won four games. If you start going season ticket in August going, we're only going to win four times.
Oh my God.
Nearby rivals, Birmingham City, fared nearly as badly. They were relegated second place to bottom. Both clubs would not return to the top flight until 2002.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. I remember those 2002 squads, actually.
So they both come up together. Both went down together in 86. Both come up together in 2002. The final relegation, this is a bit sad, relegation place went to Ipswich Town.
Oh, how the mighty have fallen.
Yeah, who had gradually fallen out of contention with the First Division's leading pack since Bobby Robson's departure 4 years earlier to England.
That is a fairly rapid decline.
It is, yeah.
4 years from a European...
Yeah, and they were in the title race 2 years in a row. Finished second in it, I think it was 82. We did it. Wow. It was his last season, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
81 then it would have been. Yeah. So yeah, they went down and ultimately didn't again come back up for quite a long time. Mm. So that was, you know, kind of the end of Ipswich of being any kind of a major force.
Yeah, sure.
Which is amazing to think that can happen to teams.
Yeah.
You know, over, you know, they were massive in the late 70s, 80s. You're an Ipswich Town fan, you're happy.
Yeah, too right.
And then
you wouldn't envisage that just four seasons later you'd be relegated.
Exactly. But for the underdog stories, I remember this. Oxford United.
I have no memory of Oxford ever being a First Division team.
Well, I mean, they were fighting relegation most of this and just escaped relegation in this season. But they amazingly won the League Cup, which was called,
It
was called the Milk Cup.
No way.
In 1986.
I would never have known Oxford did that.
So what you will know is that the team that Oxford were playing with included John Aldridge and Ray Houghton.
Oh, yeah, of course. The Aldridge, yeah.
Yeah. So who then came to Liverpool the year after. So they smashed QPR 3-0 at Wembley to record their only major honour.
Amazing.
Yeah.
But I think Aldridge gets 30 goals in the second division that season.
He does,
and that's why Liverpool
sign
him.
And he scored at Wembley.
Yeah.
But yeah, they were great. They were both Irish internationals, but ultimately playing for quite a low level team. But they both went to Liverpool as a result of this season.
And were great for Liverpool as
they
well, were. Both of them.
Yeah, really they kind of good. Almost brought in, talking about Liverpool era, as they brought in the new era, the kind of late 80s, which saw, you know, a fair bit of success through that kind of 4 or 5 year period before Dalglish went.
Yeah.
And, you know, the changing the guard happened in a sense. But, they were Barnes, Aldridge, Houghton, Beardsley. They call it the greatest transfer window in history.
Is that right?
Yeah. Although it's a bit misleading because it actually happened over a period of 8 months.
Right,
Aldridge came in January of 87. But that period of time, they bought those four players.
Wow.
I mean, that's not bad, is it?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, how to rebuild a team in 6 months.
Yeah, because like you say, 4 years later, you'd probably look back and go, those are our four most important players
right.
as well.
So Yeah. I mean, when has that ever happened nowadays? Like,
normally if you get the one player that's really helped you, like, good transfer window. There's a couple we'll forget about, but we got whoever.
Yeah, no,
definitely. You're right. Wow.
So that was Oxford United's success. Ron Atkinson, we'll come back to. He didn't recover from the failure to capitalise on the incredible start that United made to the season. And this is interesting, a bit of a sliding doors, with no UEFA Cup to satisfy the fans or the board.
Oh, wow.
To distract away from the fact that they threw the league away, really. Sure. United started badly to the next season, and by November of the following season, Big Ron was gone.
Is that right?
So, literally a year on from being 10 points clear in the league, and
he's
he was
gone.
Fired.
Ron, the bottom line is you've lost, you're running out of time, you're below the drop line. Where next? How can you get out of it?
Tottenham on Sunday, Saturday. That's next. That's next.
But you have to show, surely, don't you, a little bit more than there was evident tonight.
I'm sorry, you can sit there and look and play with all your silly machines as much as you like. I'm manager of a football team, I'm an experienced manager. Yeah, if the boys hadn't done enough, I'll whip them. But I ain't whipping them for that tonight. Who won the Man of the Match award?
Dave Besant won the
Man of the
Match
award. Oh, sorry, so he must have played not bad then. Thank you very much, lads. See you later.
And the job was given to little-known Alex Ferguson.
Yeah, he wasn't a Sir back then. He was not a Knight of the Realm. He was just a little Scottish upstart.
Just little Alex.
Just little Alex. Oh, Mr. Ferguson. You're getting lost in the big city of Manchester. How patronising can I be to argue the greatest manager in history?
Oh, dear.
But no, he wasn't Sir Alex. He had no reason to be respected.
No, he didn't.
Well, actually, he'd done pretty well with Aberdeen, to be fair, but...
He did, in fairness, yeah. But, yeah, I mean, obviously, we'll cover, you know, Alex Ferguson's... It'd be interesting, really, the next four or five reports, because he didn't have success.
No, but it's just like... He's the villain that gets beaten and then comes back more powerful. It's kind of like, yeah, I'll enjoy the fact that Sir Alex struggles for the first few seasons. And then I'm going to have to sit through 15 seasons of like, and United win, and Sir Alex did this, and United win. Oh, yeah, okay, brilliant. I'm just, like, that's my jaws. I can just feel it coming now.
Yeah. So poor old Big Ron and Big Mo, they were... they were moved out of Manchester. As we said, Gary Lineker scored 40 goals for Everton in his debut season, including the opener in the FA Cup final at Wembley.
Yeah.
When he made Hansen look like
a little sway mug.
Yeah, he did. But much like the league, Everton couldn't hold on, and Liverpool won the cup with two goals from Ian Rush.
That's right.
A feat he repeated in the 89 Merseyside.
Oh, yeah.
Cup final.
That's a little quirk, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, interesting.
Is this the final where Hansen handballs it and gets away with bloody murder?
Oh, I don't know that.
We've covered it. I can't remember if it's this final. I think it might be where Hansen, like, it's a stone wall handball.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and we get away with it. I think it's this year, but...
Cheating bastards.
Hey, mate, Thierry Henry knocked out an entire nation with a handball, so I think Everton got off lightly.
Yeah, true. Interesting thing for this cup final is that Neville Southall was injured in the week before.
No.
And therefore didn't play. Bobby Mims, do you remember Bobby Mims?
Yeah.
He went on to play for Blackburn.
I was about to say, yeah.
So he was a very young kind of substitute goalkeeper.
He was an England backup goalie as well, wasn't he?
Eventually, yeah. So not, I mean, he was like, I think he was like 21.
Oh, right, he's like
in this cup
wet
final.
Years.
And there was a couple of the goals were a little bit like, oh, would Southall save that?
Probably.
So yeah, I mean, in a way, it's kind of just, it was Everton's luck towards the end of that. You know, season Liverpool just dominant and lifted the cup and therefore did the league and cup double. His year, Gary Lineker would get better though, but not before an amazing sliding doors moment. And we'll kind of finish with this. He went to Mexico 86 on a run of four games without an international goal.
What is it with England strikers?
Interesting, isn't it? Yeah, I didn't realise that. So, and he wasn't the number one striker by any means.
Was he not?
Not
who
going
was ahead
into
of
Mexico.
Him?
Well, there was a number of players. Right. So, you obviously, had Luther Blissett, we talked about, Mark Haley, we talked about, Kerry Dixon, we talked about. So, yeah, there's a bunch of guys. So, he, you know, he would play, but
yeah,
he wasn't
sure.
Beardsley was in amongst it as well. But he wouldn't necessarily be the first name on the
on
sheet.
The team sheet, yeah.
This tournament changed that.
Yes, it
but
did.
Not before this. He broke his wrist in a warm up game. Do you remember Lineker played in 86 with a bandage on his arm?
Vaguely, yeah. I'm trying to picture the images in my mind's eye, but not that I'd ever noted it massively.
Yeah, though. So they went to quite a controversial nothing warm-up game in Canada, and he kind of got roughed up a little bit
right.
by, you know, defenders that were excited to be playing real players. Yeah. And he broke his wrist, and he had actually a cast, very small cast on his wrist, and then a bandage.
Yeah.
And FIFA allowed him to play because the cast had been... softened
no
by
way.
The bandage.
Yeah, yeah.
So he played the whole tournament with that. So he went to Mexico 86 with a broken wrist, but was allowed to play. His dad, this is from Lineker, had placed a bet on him at 14-1 to be top scorer at the World Cup.
Incredible.
And was livid when he found out his son had been injured because he thought he might lose his money. Lineker said, I thought he was mad and told him he was chucking his money away. By the time England lost to Portugal in the first game and then drew 0-0 with Morocco, many pundits had lost faith in Lineker.
Wow. So that is sliding
It's nuts, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's crazy to think.
What if Robson had dropped him?
Yeah. And then there was talk of that. And there was talk that that should happen. And, you know, Haitley should play and all the rest of it. But anyway, Robson kept faith with Beardsley and Lineker. And it was Beardsley who put the ball across for Lineker's first goal. 34 minutes later... Lineker had scored a hat-trick to launch England's World Cup and set him on the way to the Golden Boot.
Yes.
Following the World Cup success, he gained a dream move to Barcelona and became England's main striker for the rest of his record-breaking career.
Amazing.
Incredible.
Absolutely incredible.
Absolutely nuts, isn't it?
That's what Beardsley will do for you, though. Who, to be fair, Lineker has named Beardsley as his favourite ever strike partner.
Yeah.
And I tell you what, it's probably the clear communication that brought it between them.
Well, he'd rap instructions.
There was a rhythm to it that Lineker really enjoyed.
Big hip-hop fan. Go on, Peter. Do it again.
Well, not to take away from Lineker's incredible success at international level, but couldn't quite be matched at domestic level. But yeah, Addy, thank you for the report.
No worries.
So with that, join us next week as we delve into another great English First Division.
It was just banter.